This week, we look at why Roku is prospering even though it is making no money on player sales, and why Nielsen's average viewing numbers could be hiding how successful streaming really is. Let's get started.
Edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media is with me, Colin, as we charge into our 501st podcast this week, right?
Yeah, 501. That's plenty. Well, we are going a little bit of a different route this week. Last week we talked about the Super Bowl, which was, of course, very fresh in our mind, but there is something else that is incredibly fresh in our mind. And that's Roku's 2019 and Q4 results, right?
Yeah, which were very impressive, and you are going to get us started.
I am, and as you say, very impressive. The company added nearly 10 million active users in 2019. They're now at 36.9 million. That's up 36% over the previous year. And they continue to do pretty well in getting people to actually watch the advertising part, the advertising supported parts that are running on Roku, because their average revenue per unit also increased pretty handy. I think it was up about a buck on the quarter, but $23.14 is their average revenue per unit, and that is per quarter. That is not a monthly number, that's a per quarter number. But that's actually up 29% over the previous Q4. So good growth there as well. And they also saw pretty strong growth in the hours used, the hours that they streamed. They said it was actually, they streamed a record 40.3 billion hours. But I don't really look at that so much as I look at the amount of time that individuals are watching. So I sort of divide that out by the number of active users. And that basically means people are watching for 207 minutes per day through the device, which is up 18%. On Q4 2018. So all of those things are to the good. There is one interesting thing that they mentioned, and which actually did show up in the numbers, because actually in the previous quarter, in Q3, people streamed more minutes, slightly more, just about 207, 208 minutes per day. And they actually explained this, that they implemented a feature which basically asks people now, are you still watching? And they weren't doing that before. So if they don't reply to that, I guess they stop streaming. So that's how that's why they explained that slight downtick in Q4 over Q3. But it's still a big win. And in those houses with a Roku, boy, they're watching a lot of video on that device. And actually, there was an interesting comment in the call, Will. Basically, they said that half of the people that are using Rokus don't have pay TV subscriptions. And I think that explains why there's so much streaming, why people are streaming so many hours per day using the device. So, you know, that's all to the good. And I think that's the top line revenue. Well, they crossed the billion mark. They're now 1.12 billion company they own in 2019. And most of that is coming from the platform now. Platform revenue increased year over year 78% to 740 million. And that means the player revenue is responsible for the rest, probably around 400 million. And, you know, they're doing extremely well in all of the areas that they are tracking. They're still making a loss, but they're on track, they're on plan, as they say. So I think it was another very, very strong quarter for the company.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a very strong quarter for the company. Q4 is always the strongest quarter of the year. And the growth here, as you outlined, it was terrific. I'll just say one quick thing, actually. back on your point about the "Are you still watching?" feature, I really like that. I think that's nice transparency because, you know, we both know that in the TV world, people have had their TVs on as, you know, essentially background or ambient noise for hours a day. And there's always been a big question as to, from the advertising side, as to whether the ads are actually seen or whether they're just playing in some background and, you know, have really not had any impact at all. And that became actually a carryover issue in the online video world as well, because we all know about autoplay video ads and embedded players down 9 scrolls on a page, and you hear the audio and you're not even sure what's going on. It's just really annoying. So I like the idea that Roku has introduced this feature, "Are you still watching?" I think that's really nice transparency for the advertisers. And it also is, in some ways, actually good at the broadband ISP level as well, that there isn't just bandwidth being used up by people Roku's when they aren't even watching any longer. The TV is just on somewhere in the background. It's not even being watched. So I think that's a win for everybody. I like that a lot. One other thing I think was worth mentioning is, you certainly elaborated on the role of the platform revenue, and that's been growing, and it's been really amazing to watch Roku pull off this pivot from being, you know, essentially a player company to now being essentially an advertising company. In Q4, they did record their first negative gross margin on players, although a very, very small one at that. It was a minus 0.5%. But Roku said it very plainly in the letter to shareholders that we plan to operate the player segment at a gross margin close to zero to continue driving device sales and growing active accounts. And in other words, you know, more players out there, better for the ad business. And the only thing that I wonder about with that strategy is that, of course, Amazon with its Fire TVs have become a major player in the market as well. And you just sort of wonder, like, there's no doubt that Amazon is selling its Fire TVs in Q4 at probably a break-even gross margin or slightly negative as well. But like, what does that mean for Q4 2020? Like, where is this road taking us? And I find myself wondering, remember way back in the days when AOL was on top of the world, you'd come home and there'd be like 5 AOL discs in your mailbox, and they were basically being used as coasters because they just carpet bombed everybody and anybody. And I just find myself wondering, like, where is the player business going? And could Amazon escalate the stakes by in some way essentially giving them away, never mind selling them at break even or slightly negative gross margin? Could Amazon at some point be practically giving these things away? Like, you know, you get an email saying, "Congratulations, you've been a Prime member for 3 months. We're sending you a free Fire TV stick with your next order," something along those lines. It does sort of make me wonder where things are going from here.
It certainly does seem to be going that way. And, you know, Roku's stated several times in the earnings call today that they're managing their player business as basically zero profit business these days. And I think you're right. I mean, it would make pretty good sense, I think, for Amazon to just say, "Hey, you signed up for Prime. Here's a free stick," because they just know how sticky the video part is if they can get people watching it. And as we all know, that translates into more sales in the Amazon regular retail store if people are Prime members. So there's a lot of incentive for that. And I absolutely think that that is the direction where this market is going. You're going to get a stick or something when you sign up for one of these services, if you make an extended commitment, because, you know, of course, most people are still signing up for Prime for a year. So I think it'd be difficult to justify that on a Disney Plus price of $7 a month to give them a stick. But, you know, maybe if they make a commitment for a year, then it's almost worth it.
I don't know, Colin. I mean, a year-long commitment to get a $15 stick, that seems like too much of an ask to the consumer. you know, that we saw what was it not long ago where if you committed to DirecTV Now for what was it a month or 3 months, you'd get a free Apple TV, I think, wasn't it? Wasn't that their standing offer for a while? That's like a $200 or $300 device.
So I don't know, Will. I don't remember. That sounds like a very attractive offer, maybe too attractive. Maybe we're misremembering that. I think $199 to make a commitment of 3 months on a service like that, it just seemed, although I do, maybe you are right. Maybe it was that. But you know, one of the things I did want to talk about was how important smart TVs have become to Roku. They did talk a little bit about that in the earnings call. They reiterated that about 1 in 3 smart TVs in the US in 2019 was actually powered by Roku. And I sort of validated that because I went back and looked at the TV sales and, TCL, who is a licensor of Roku, was the biggest selling television in the United States in 2019. So it makes a lot of sense that they would be acquiring that number of users. And that by my calculations, that could be responsible for at least half of the activations that they're seeing in 2019. So smart TVs, I think, are a really, really important part of their business. One thing that did come up in the Q&A, in the financial Q&A, was the Fox spat that happened just before the Super Bowl. And well, you wouldn't have expected them to answer it directly, but they actually gave some pretty interesting hints as to what was going on there. And it's basically their position is, look, our first objective is to help people reach their audience. And then because we're able to help them reach the audience, we feel we should participate in some respect with the revenue that they're earning there. And so that's a very, very clear indication that the argument they got into with Fox was over, almost certainly over ad splits or some sort of ad participation, because there wasn't a subscription for either of the products through which the Super Bowl was streamed. So I think that's almost certainly what was going on there, and I suppose it bodes pretty poorly for this being a continuing problem. So I think the bottom line here is we probably are going to see more of these arguments between platform vendors like Roku and content providers like Disney and Fox and all the rest. So I think that's kind of a fact of life, I think, going forward with Roku. And frankly, you know, we've seen it with Amazon as well. Amazon took a long time to reach agreement with Disney Plus before they actually got that on the platform and everything was tickety-boo. So anyway, I think we're in for more fights like that going forward, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But as I can't remember if it was Scott or Anthony said on the earnings call, this market is growing so fast and there's so much room yet to grow. We'll talk about the Nielsen numbers in just a minute. But when you're in an environment where the pie is expanding, there's ample incentive for everybody to get a deal done. It's only when the pie is shrinking that you kind of get these loggerheads type situations, the blackouts that we've seen in the cable and satellite and telco world. But I think they noted very well that they are in a position now, especially with 36 million active accounts, they're in a position to help these direct-to-consumer services grow really, really quickly. And I think that gives them a certain amount of leverage. And ultimately, it's the TV networks or the DTC services that have to figure out how to not create a dependency on Roku or anyone else, for that matter, certainly not Amazon. We've seen what dependency looks like in the digital world when it comes to publishers becoming dependent on Facebook or Google for something, and then the algorithm changes. So the DTC offerings need to make sure they don't create a dependency on the devices, But at the same time, the devices like Roku and Amazon, I think, are in a pretty good position now, especially with their footprints. So it is going to be interesting to see how the dynamic unfolds. But again, as long as there's growth for everybody, I don't think these spats last that long.
No. Well, hopefully not. There were a couple of other things that I thought we should just touch on, Will, before we leave the subject. One is international. Roku has only recently expanded internationally. They said about international was it wasn't really making a big contribution in revenue yet, but that they were pleased with the direction in which they were going. They mentioned two markets in particular, Canada. They said that they're basically one in four of every smart TVs that are sold is a Roku TV in Canada. And they also said that in Mexico, they just signed up an additional seven. So they now have nine TV licensors in the Mexican market. So they're anticipating big growth there. They said nothing about Europe. And I really think Europe will be a challenge. And the reason is simple. Fire TV is king. It really is very, very deeply penetrated and popular in Europe. I looked at three countries there, and of those three countries, two of them wrote Fire TV was leading. The third one, it wasn't, Fire TV wasn't available. That was Sweden, but it is now available there. So I think they really have a tough fight with Amazon and Fire TV in Europe. That could be a really tough situation for them. And remember that Amazon is really basically copying Roku's model here everywhere. So they also have free TV going on their platform in Europe. They're pricing it very aggressively, and of course it supports the whole Amazon ecosystem. So there's lots of reason for them to continue to take very, very low margins on their players there. So this is going to be tough, I think, for Roku to be successful in Europe. Other markets, maybe Latin America is a little bit stronger for them, and maybe Canada is a little bit stronger for them. So anyway, international markets, I think, will continue to be a challenge. And one other thing came up, which was the Roku channel. And I've really been trying to figure out, they've said that Roku channel, which is their free ad-supported channel, which they work with the other partners on the platform in providing content through. They've said it's the fifth most popular channel on the box now, but they really haven't given any specific numbers. So it's very difficult to figure out how it compares to somebody like a Pluto TV or a Tubi or a Zumo or somebody like that. They sort of, in the call, they said that they had 56 million viewers, but that was for the whole of 2019. So at least that's the way they phrased it. So it's very, very hard to compare that. This is a market that is getting much, much more competitive. So we had three announcements in this market just in the last week. One was Cinedigm with Viewster, is appearing now on pretty much all of the top branded TVs, smart TVs worldwide. There was a Redbox, would you believe Redbox is getting into the free ad-supported streaming?
Who'd you say?
Redbox. Yes, they're still around. They're still around. And then the third one was, of course, CBS. And CBS is expanding all access, and there's going to be a free tier, and that free tier is going to be powered by Pluto TV. So, boy, this AVOD and free ad-supported TV, linear channels, this is getting an extremely competitive space, Will. And I don't know, I think it's going to get harder, not easier, for Roku channel to continue to grow at the rate that it has been growing in the past. So anyway, just some other observations about their business.
Well, there's no shortage of free TV, that's for sure, and there's no shortage of subscription TV. But actually, I think on that note, Colin, one thing that is important to keep in mind is, and we'll do this in just a very short couple minutes, but Nielsen had new numbers out this week, the total audience report. And I think we both concluded the same thing from that, basically, which is that despite all the growth and you and I talking about OTT every week in the podcast, in reality, it's still actually very early days in terms of streaming. Nielsen said that just 19% of total TV usage time is accounted for by streaming. And I thought that was just a great reminder that it still truly is early innings here, right?
I think it is. But I got to say, Will, that one of the things that Nielsen does, and of course they're perfectly entitled to do this, is that they tend to average things over all of the users. So, over the whole adult population. And when you actually look at what's going on with users of devices, the picture is a little bit different. So I'll give you a quick example. Connected TVs, for example. If you look at just the users of connected TVs, and there are, according to Nielsen, in Q3 2019, there are 109 million adults who are using a connected TV. On average, they're watching about an hour and a quarter a day. So that is significant viewership. And of course, there are groups that are watching more and less. So I think it's interesting to note what the average is over the entire population. But it really does give you, I think, a false impression on what's going on in the homes of those people that are actually using these devices and using these alternative methods of watching television. And in those homes, 40% of homes, something like that, that are using a connected TV. Connected TV streaming is as much as a third of the viewing of television. So anyway, that's just a note, and that's just looking at Nielsen. Nielsen gives two sets of numbers in those reports, which I love. They give the average over all adults, and they also give the numbers for those users of the devices. That's just an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the CTV households are the kind of proverbial canary in a coal mine, right? They're the ones that the whole market is going to look like, and more so 10 years, 20 years from now.
That's right. And actually, you know, I said an hour and a quarter is being used on average. But if what we know from the Roku data is that half of Roku homes, half of that 36 million people that are using a Roku these days, half of that lot don't have pay TV at all. They're really not watching that type of content. So that sort of, that they're even distorting those numbers a little bit, right? Because they're watching for much longer than an hour and a quarter. They're watching for, nearly 4 hours. Well, not, I guess it's a little bit off 4 hours, but at least 3.5 hours a day. So they sort of skew the numbers as well. So anyway, just some interesting details, I think, that show that in some homes, in a lot of homes, the viewing picture is very different than those averages would paint.
Yeah, fair, very fair point. I agree with all that. And I think that's all we have for this week, Colin, right?
I think it is.
All right, good chatting as always. And thanks everyone for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. And we will see you all again next week.